Once upon a time, there was a little princess, the most beautiful little princess in all the land.
This is Joyce McKinney, and the little princess she's talking about is herself.
Her hair was long and blonde, and her eyes were as brown as the dark waters of the river which ran by her castle. But the little princess was unhappy, for she was lonely.
In 1977, Joyce McKinney and three male companions flew from Los Angeles, California, to London, England, to track down and kidnap a Mormon missionary named Kirk Anderson.
Someday, she would find her kind, handsome prince, and he would sweep her up on a big, white horse, and he would take her away and marry her, and they would live happily ever after.
Joyce had met Kirk months earlier in Utah, and was convinced that he was her kind and handsome prince. But when he went away on his mission without telling her he was leaving or where he was going, she thought he had been absconded by an evil brainwashing cult. So she hired a private detective in Los Angeles to track him down, and then traveled with her entourage to England to liberate him from this wicked cult and live happily ever after.
Hi, I'm Joyce McKinney, and that's from my pending book, A Very Special Love Story.
A very special love story indeed. But when two of these three male accomplices realized what Joyce was planning, they bailed. Joyce and her very special friend, KJ, tracked down Elder Anderson, abducted him at false gunpoint, drove him to a quaint little cottage in the country, tied him spread eagle to a bed, and for 3 days engaged in some very special love. I'm Glenn Ostlund. And today on Infants on Thrones, I'll be joined by Randy Snyder.
I remember having like wet dreams about that. Like, that would be so awesome.
Jesse Smith.
She's this beauty queen, you know, hooker with all this money.
And Tom Perry.
So, Glenn, the most important question of all.
Yeah.
Would you still tap that?
To review the documentary Tabloid and discuss in excessively jocular detail the thoroughly ribald case of the manacled Mormon in sex chains.
This is Infants on Thrones. The philosophies of men mingled with humans. We are the core.
Welcome back to Infants on Thrones. Today we're going to review the 2010 documentary Tabloid. Now, Tabloid tells the bizarre story of Joyce McKinney, who made national news in the U.S. and created a huge tabloid buzz in Britain when she kidnapped and repeatedly raped a Mormon missionary. Now, the documentary features Miss McKinney herself passionately telling her side of the story in what I thought was a rather shocking display of delusion. It's one of those train wreck type situations where it's just so awful, but you can't quite look away. That's Tabloid. But what really intrigued me the most about the movie was the way that Mormonism was portrayed and the role that it played in Miss McKinney's delusions. Now, some of the ways they portrayed Mormonism I agreed with, and others I really didn't. But it seemed like the sort of thing that could inspire a lively panel discussion and would hopefully tell an engaging story to you listeners that, you know, if you're like me, you probably hadn't heard before. A Tabloid's available on Netflix, so if you haven't seen it, you might want to go check it out before listening any further. But I will provide a high-level summary of the main points, so you should be able to follow along even if you haven't seen it. Now, before we go any further, I want to warn you, if you're easily offended by off-color language or overtly sexual discussions, or even, you know, the locker room talk where a bunch of guys are talking about things that, yeah, maybe they really don't know that much about, then this isn't the episode for you. These panel discussions did get pretty raw, so go ahead and proceed at your own discretion. Okay, so let's dive right in. Here is Joyce McKinney herself telling her side of the story.
I hadn't been out in the world much till I went to Utah. You know, I hadn't been around much.
Joyce McKinney was born in North Carolina in 1949. Her family eventually moved out west, and she was crowned Miss Wyoming in 1972 at the age of 22. She presents herself as an innocent, sheltered young woman, but as you'll see, later evidence arises that calls all that into question.
But there were a lot of men attracted to you.
Well, I guess so. I don't know. I'm not that vain. And I'd say, but I was looking, I wasn't looking for just any guy. I wanted a special guy. I wanted a special guy. And he had to have certain qualities. There are plenty of guys out there, but I wanted a special guy.
So she went to BYU, where special guys are grown, and joined the drama department. And at some point, a professor of hers introduced her to the missionaries. And this is how she came to be familiar with the Mormon Church. And it sounds kind of like it was a little underhanded way that the professor did this, but I'll let you judge that for yourself.
I met this professor, and he said, well, I've got these perfect guys for you, and they're just your type, Joyce. They don't smoke, and they don't drink, and they're clean cut, and you're just going to love them. And why don't you come over to my house and meet them? They were Mormons. They didn't tell me what Mormonism was all about. He didn't say we're a group that believes that Jesus was a polygamist and was married to Mary Magdalene.
Really?
He didn't say we believe that God lives on a star named Kolob.
Well, technically it's a planet near the star Kolob, but okay.
He didn't say we believe that black people were cursed with the mark of Cain. They made me think they were a church. They made me think that they were family-oriented. And so I was drawn to them as a young 19-year-old teenager, like a moth to a flame. I was just so happy to go to this place where I thought that I would have my pick of just all-American friends, people, husband material, I guess.
And one of these all-American guys was named Kirk Anderson. And you know, Joyce owned a Corvette, and Kirk owned a Corvette. She was maybe 6 or 7 years older than him at the time that they met. So I don't really understand when she's talking about being 19 years old. She was older when they met. But, you know, they met, and it was sparks. And she said right at the top, the very first date, there were some really special things that were happening. Because remember, this was a very special love.
He actually told me he loved me the first night I met him. And asked me to marry him the second night. And then the next thing I know, we're naming our kids. And we were going to name them all with J's and K's. J for Joyce, K's for Kirk. Joshua, Jacob. You know, we had the names picked out. Kyle, Kirk.
Corey Antimer. So at this point, Joyce claims that they were engaged. But then a very strange thing happened.
Kirk and I were just ready for the big wedding, and everything was happy. The only problem is I was wanting to get married in the Christian church, and he was getting pressure from the other side. And so one day he vanished into thin air. I don't mean he left me. I don't mean he abandoned me. I don't mean he left me for another woman. I mean he evaporated into thin air. He wasn't the kind of person to just run off like that. His things were still at my place, and, you know, it was just weird.
Yeah, it is weird because, you know, I've gone on a mission. And when there were people that I wanted to keep in touch with, I gave them my address. They knew exactly where I was.
I did what any American girl would do if her fiancé vanished in thin air. I looked for him. I went to L.A., and I worked 3 jobs trying to save up enough money to pay a private investigator to find out what happened to him.
Now, after this story became huge, the British press went back and dug up a lot of dirt on Joyce. And they found topless photos, personal ads in the paper offering nude massage, oral sex. So it appears that these 3 jobs in L.A. were a little more than what an innocent, sheltered woman would be willing to do. Now, she denies that she did any of those things, but the evidence says otherwise.
The private investigator found him in England. The Mormons had him.
Yep, the Mormons had him. So she and her best friend, a guy named KJ, decided to start planning this trip to England to go and rescue Kirk from the Mormons.
KJ was like my big brother, and he said to me, I don't want you going over there to England by yourself. Said, you don't know what they're going to do to you. All I knew is this powerful group had done something to the man I loved. We got 2 bodyguards to go with us. One was a big guy that was a bodybuilder guy, and the other was a pilot.
Okay, now I've got to read to you the personal ad that Joyce put in the newspaper to recruit these bodyguards. So it says, free trip to Europe. Big adventurous dude wanted. Must be 6'2" and over 210 pounds. Seeking a Rocky or Mr. Atlas type, prefer bodybuilder or musician. All expenses paid if you help a lovely fox fulfill a unique romantic sexual fantasy. as part of her wedding party. So she used this ad to recruit two bodyguards who traveled to England with Joyce and KJ. But eventually, both of them bailed when they realized what she was up to. She had this wireless radio equipment so that KJ could talk to the missionaries and she could listen in from the car. And they had chloroform and a fake gun to ensure that they could take Kirk with minimal resistance. Here's what one of the bodyguards had to say about this whole experience.
Out come two young men dressed in suits, a tie, and a white shirt. And she told me, there is Kirk. Well, I was totally surprised. This was nobody being held captive. And that's when Joyce kind of leveled with me. She showed me a bottle of chloroform, and I'd already seen this phony gun they had. I was going to be no part of any of this, and I told her that.
So it was just Joyce and KJ at this point, but that didn't stop her plan. She had KJ pose as an investigator, and they set up a meeting at the church. So when Kirk showed up, KJ pulled out the gun and marched him out to the car.
He got in the car, and he goes, how long have you been in England? Like a robot. He was almost speaking in a monotone voice, and he'd go, they said you didn't love me anymore. It was like he had a personality alteration. Kirk number one and Kirk number two. Kirk number one was the man I fell in love with. Kirk number two was cult Kirk.
Now, Kirk Anderson didn't want to have anything to do with this movie, so all we know from his side of the story are things that he testified in court back in 1977. But according to Joyce, Kirk got in the car and went with her willingly. According to Kirk, he was chloroformed and covered under a blanket. And then Joyce and KJ drove him out to a small rented cottage in Devon, tied him up to a bed. Then KJ bowed out while Joyce and Kirk celebrated what she called their, 3-day glorious honeymoon. And this is where things get really crazy.
Well, I was looking for someplace peaceful, where he could normalize. Someplace where he could come back to Kirk number one. I had a big fireplace, patchwork quilt, silk sheets, blue to match his eyes with his initials on it. Cinnamon oil back rub, because he loved my back rubs, and all his favorite foods in the fridge. Oh, I had chocolate cake and southern fried chicken. He loved my chicken. Mashed potatoes. I made everything that he wanted. I was like his little, wifey almost. We're slow dancing. He got turned on as we were dancing. I'll be blunt. He had an erection, okay. And we sat down on the bed, and he said, can you give me a back rub? And I got the cinnamon oil, which I had warmed, and I was giving him a back rub. And he had these ugly garments on, and I said, how am I supposed to give you a back rub with this Mormon thing on? And I ripped the ugly things off because they smelled, and they had those occultic symbols. And I didn't want anything ugly there in our beautiful moment. It was like a honeymoon cottage. And we burned them. We actually burned them. And
you ripped off his magic underwear
and I threw them in the fireplace where they belonged, where they should put them all, as far as I'm concerned.
Her story is a little difficult to follow because at first she says that he got aroused while they were dancing and he had an erection. But later she says that he was impotent and the only way that she could get him erect was to tie him down to the bed, a little trick that she read in a book so that he could just let go and not have to feel any guilt for what was going on. So she admits to tying him up, but, she says it was for his own good.
Kirk was impotent. He was sexually impotent because of this brainwashing. He's not supposed to have sexual feelings. He's not supposed to have emotional feelings. He's not supposed to fall in love. And we were in love. He loved me, and I loved him. I knew there was only one way to get Kirk out of Mormonism, and that was to make love with him. Because for a Mormon missionary to have a love affair is totally taboo. They can't be in a room alone with a girl without their companion with them, to even shake hands. So if it took giving up my virginity in a romantic moonlit cottage, so be it. I just wanted him out of that cult.
Jeez, that's not how I got out.
We started to make love, and all of a sudden he jumps up on the bed like this, and he goes, by the law of the holy prophet Joseph Smith, I cannot touch my bodies or the bodies of others in a natural experimental way. By the law of the holy prophet, hold a Book of Mormon firmly in hand. Sing a Mormon song, because he's turned on. And he's not supposed to be. And I go, I'd come across an ocean to find him, and the Mormons were in our bedroom.
Okay, now that chant seems a little weird. Now, we'll talk about this in more detail during the panel discussion, but to me, this sounds like a freaked-out Mormon kid trying everything that he can do to keep this event from happening. It doesn't sound at all like he's a willing participant.
I went back in the kitchen and I got myself a real cold glass of water.
Does he still have the erection while he's chanting?
Well, I came back, to be continued, I came back in there and I'm thinking, am I doing something wrong? He started to cry. He had ejaculated, I guess. He said, please don't tell him about the filthy place, what happened at the filthy place. And I said, honey, what's wrong? He goes, they'll know. I mean, every guy on the planet masturbates and has wet dreams. And I ask him, I said, honey, don't you have those dreams guys have or whatever they're called? He goes, yeah, but I didn't tell him in the interview. I go, what interview? They talk to you about this stuff? He goes, yeah. Once a week, they take us in rooms by ourselves and they say, M1, M2, M3, M1, M2, M3. I go, what's that? Masturbation once, masturbation twice, masturbation three times. So many times you're out, you're ex, you're home, you're off your mission, you can't get married in the temple. I go, Kirk, these people are controlling your sex drive. They're controlling your mind. They're controlling your food. You can't have coffee, tea, or Pepsi Cola.
You see what I mean by train wreck?
We made love actually for 3 days. We sort of like didn't get out of bed. It was a honeymoon, was what it was for me. I wanted us to have a good sex life. I wanted to be a good wife to Kirk, and I wanted to give him lots of babies in my tummy. I didn't look at sex as a bad thing with him. I looked at it as a melting of two souls. Because when he kissed me, it was like we melted into one person. It was like I didn't know where I stopped and he began.
Eventually, they left the cottage, and Kirk was able to call the mission home and get back to safety. Joyce and KJ were arrested. There was a bit of jail time and a preliminary trial. She gave this infamous statement that she loved Kirk so much that she would do anything for him, even ski down Mount Everest with a carnation in her nose. You know, she was released on bail, and then she snuck out of the country very shrewdly, never going back and never really paying for her crimes. But of course, to her, she never thought it was a crime at all. It's not really kidnapping if she's just trying to rid Kirk 1 of the brainwashed Kirk 2. And as for the question of rape?
Do you think a woman can rape a man?
No. I think that's like putting a marshmallow in a parking meter. A guy either wants to have sex or he doesn't. He has an erection or he doesn't.
So there you go. You will never be able to look at a marshmallow again without thinking of Joyce McKinney and the manacled Mormon in sex chains. Okay, so let's go to the panel discussion where we bring on Tom and Randy and Jesse. And then later on, a little surprise visit from Matt, but don't want to give it away just yet.
I think she was supposedly so smart and such a genius that's what pushed her into this like level of crazy, like just psychological dilemma that she had going on in her head where she didn't know what was reality and she thought she was invincible, or I don't know what was going on.
Well, crazy plus a high IQ makes a great criminal. So, like, if I was in England and I was let out on bail, I wouldn't know what the fuck to do. She knew exactly what to do, and she got out of England with a very clever scheme. So, you know, I give her props for being clever in a lot of situations that I would have known what to do. But overall, she's just a crazy person that I just want to back slowly away from.
Yeah, it is a little frightening. She is a little frightening.
She was I was terrified of her by the end of the show. It was just, I mean, the stuff that she came up with, you know, she's talking about getting out of England and she's like, "Oh, I just got a few birth certificates from dead people." And
like, you know, I don't even know how to do that. How do you do that when you're in a foreign fucking country?
I thought it was interesting too, the part about she's admitting to the camera that she lied about things like that. You know, admitting that she was deceiving people and she's saying, "Look how clever I am for doing this." But then at the same time, she's denying these things like, "Well, they never took any nude pictures of me."
Right. She's expecting us to buy one of her other stories while she's admitting to the smaller
ones. She's both intelligent but crazy. And we can't relate to it because like, we're neither – I don't have an IQ of 168 and I'm not crazy. So it's like really hard to relate to her. Like, impossible to relate to her.
So I want to go back for a minute when she's talking about meeting the missionaries. She hears their message and she's very impressed with them. So I want to explore that for a minute. But she said what they didn't tell her was that we're a group who believes that Jesus was a polygamist, that he was married to Mary Magdalene, that God lives on a star named Kolob, and that yeah. black and people were cursed with the mark of Cain. So I wanted to kind of go down that list and see, like, did Mormons as a group believe these things?
Well, they went down the anti-Mormon stereotype. They even did the cartoon from the Godmakers.
Right.
Godmakers, like, was throughout this whole documentary.
Right, they kept splicing it in.
I hate the Godmakers.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of anti-Mormon propaganda. It was kind of, yuck.
So did you guys ever come across that Jesus was a polygamist? Did you ever believe that at any point
in your life? I heard speculation that he was married to Mary Magdalene, but never a polygamist.
Oh, I heard it. Because I served in Arizona, and so there was a lot of, like, amateur theologians that were Hugh Nibley fans. You know, I had a ward mission leader who was, like, really into, you know, the deep doctrines. And
this is when you were a missionary there, right?
This is when I was a missionary, and I was just, like, you know, like, at the feet of the master.
Yeah, definitely.
That one of the reasons Jesus was hated was because of all the wives that followed him.
Wow.
And so it was like, oh my God, I am privy to some very special knowledge.
Did you believe it when you heard this?
Oh yeah, because it played into the polygamy narrative. You know, if Joseph Smith was a polygamist, Brigham Young was a polygamist, well, the Son of God must be a polygamist.
Yeah,
well, and all of this stuff must have been lost during the apostasy. Yeah.
Like, to me, it was always impossible to imagine Jesus having sex.
And you've got an amazing imagination, Glenn.
How often try and imagine that?
Exactly. Thank you. All right, drum roll, please. Stop that, whatever that is. So,
Jesus with porn music in the background.
That's right, awesome. Right. Anyway, I don't even know if I can finish that thought. So the second thing was that he was married to Mary Magdalene, and I had heard that speculated, but I never completely believed it.
I think both of those were pretty common beliefs. Like, even though this list that you gave,
yeah,
the rest of you guys were saying, oh, this is the anti-Mormon list. I hate the Godmakers, and I think the cartoon is stupid. The B-roll from Godmakers that he plays along with it, but actually I would say everything on the list, it's not couched in Mormon terms, but it's a hit. I mean,
I disagree with that first one, though. If you're talking about Mormons in general, that Mormons as a group collectively believe that Jesus was a polygamist, I think
they're never going to say that. But
no, but I think you may find pockets of people who do, but
I agree with Glenn on this because like that's not how Mormons self-identify. They don't. Uh-uh.
I agree. They're not going to ever self-identify as it. But when you get down to brass tacks and say, "Is polygamy part of the eternal plan?" Yes. Okay. Does Jesus have a wife?
I don't think you're going to get that yes from most Mormons.
Really?
I think you get to shrug the shoulders like, I don't know.
I don't know. I'll figure that out.
Salvation.
Right. Yeah. I'll figure that out when I have to. But right now,
But here, the point, Jesse, is that she's portraying this as like all Mormons believe this, and that's what they're secretly saying behind closed doors, and they're not.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe during the 70s.
But not during sacrament meeting. Not during Relief Society and not during gospel doctrine.
I agree.
But I will give you the nod on the blacks and the priesthood thing. Obviously, that was going on then. So,
The reason I'm interested in it, Jesse, is to test her credibility as a witness and her veracity. You know, I mean, there's ways that she represents Mormons that are so completely foreign to me, having grown up as a Mormon, that it makes it hard for me to believe other things that I don't have experience with. You know, like Randy said earlier, he can't really identify her because identify with her because he doesn't have that kind of IQ and isn't crazy, he thinks. But, you know,
fuck you.
we know he's not that smart. I mean,
we can agree on that.
That's a given. That's a given.
But there are certain things that I can identify with, or I should at least be able to identify with in her story if it holds any weight. And sure, there's things that just don't. So that's why I'm interested in testing this. So like the God, you know, Jesus married to Mary Magdalene. Okay. I can kind of see that. Again, I don't think that's a mainstream belief of the church or any kind of requirement, to be a Mormon, that God lives on a star named Kolob.
And that's not even accurate. God, it drives me crazy. It's the star is like the sun in the solar system of God. He lives in the planet nearest the star named Kolob. Yeah. He lives in the Kolob solar system.
That's splitting hairs.
I agree. But I think that's
still
splitting hairs.
It just bugs me aesthetically that they say he lives on Kolob.
Yeah.
And that we will inherit our own planet. No, we inherit a fucking universe.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. And Troy Williams makes a point of, you know, I wanted my own planet. You know, like, I never thought of it as I get a planet that's Glenn's planet. You know, right. I thought you have your universe.
You get worlds without number.
Yeah, worlds without number, kind of thing. Right. But I agree with you, Jesse. That is splitting hairs. So I think.
But the
with
point
her,
is
I agree
that
with this.
She paints the Mormon church in a light that none of us really identified with.
Black people cursed with the Mark of Cain?
No, I'm talking about like this, like, like we have all these dark secrets that we hush.
Well,
hush.
Yeah, she called it a cult. I mean, obviously she's not trying to appeal to a Mormon audience or identify with a Mormon audience. She's trying to appeal to the other people, to the out group. You know, yeah. She's trying to.
But in light of the rest of her story, it shows her propensity to
exaggerate,
make everything outside of her 100% black and everything inside of her totally white.
Yeah. She has to view the church that way because in her mind it explains why the love of her life rejected her. It wasn't because he rejected her. It was because this terrible cult brainwashed him and made him reject her.
Well, this is what bugs me about the way she portrays the church. It's like, and this is what bugs me about the God makers. It's like the truth is bad enough, but they then embellish the fucking truth and then give like people in the church reason to just totally reject all the, you know, true things that they have to say about the church. The truth is bad enough as it is, and she makes a cartoon character out of it.
Well, and I found that as one of the major criticisms that I had with this documentary, because there was no balanced other side of Mormonism from what she was saying. There was just Troy Williams, who was on there essentially validating everything that she said about Mormons as a cult.
The way she painted it was like we're just a bunch of like chanting automatons.
No, I agree. She gives a negative caricature of the church to suit her own purpose.
Right. And she makes it seem like this was all being done to Kirk against his will.
Right.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Kirk?
Okay.
Because I want to know what's going on with this guy. They didn't have him in the documentary. They didn't give an explanation.
They tried. He refused.
They tried to get him. So knowing the kind of both sides of the story from the documentary, his own words aren't represented, but there's her side, and then there's the side of what a lot of the evidence and what a lot of the other people say. What do you guys think was going on in Kirk's mind when she shows up in England and he's there with his companion?
A sharknado of things going on in his mind and in his.
Well, did she have a gun?
No, she sent her little toy boy
to go say, "Hey, Joyce is out in
the
car."
Well, no, he had a toy gun. Like, she just sent this guy that Kirk would have no idea who this guy was.
What is going on with Kirk when he goes out and gets in the car? I mean, he was a big guy. It didn't sound like anyone was alleging that they forced him into the car.
Well, there was a gun. It was a fake gun, but Kirk wouldn't know that.
Well, and this is where the story gets weird, because we don't actually know whether he went in on his own or whether, you know, they threatened him and then he was going in for, you know, under force or under threat. It gets real complicated right here.
Well, maybe it's complicated for you, Tom, but I prayed about this before I watched the movie. Yeah. And I had the spirit with me.
And so set us straight there, Glenn. Yeah, set us straight.
Well, the spirit confirmed to me that he was not a willing participant in this in any way.
So none. He was a 100% victim.
I think so.
Come on.
That's what the spirit whispers this to me and tells me it is true. It tells me it is true.
So she raped him.
Yeah.
And she against his will, his dick got hard over and over and over and over.
Uh-huh.
Well, and then she burned the garments. And there's that one scene that I actually thought was a little bit brash, was where they showed the symbols of the garment real quick, like on the documentary. I was like, what the hell was that?
You, Tom, but that was like banal to me.
Well, okay, fine.
I think what they showed were Masonic symbols.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what they were.
Well, okay, fine. Jeez.
I think a little bit differently. I think he went into the car probably unwillingly, but to me, I don't find it credible that he was there for that long with her and their journey without escaping. If he had been, and I hate to blame the victim in a rape situation.
Rape.
But really, I mean, they said he was like close to 300 pounds,
yeah,
right?
250,
right.
Yeah.
So he was a big boy. And I just have a hard time believing that that she could control him like that. I mean, even if she's stripped him naked and gotten on top of him, if he'd wanted to thrash around and, I mean, I don't know. It would have been.
He was manacled. Manacled Mormon. He was tied spread eagle to the bed.
Why am I the only one? I'm the only one here that's like, do none of you guys know the power of vagina and boobs?
No, that's what I'm saying.
Those things will throw a 6'4", 250-pound guy to his knees.
That's what I'm saying, Tom.
The way I see it is, I think she pulled up and he's like, oh my gosh, hey, how's it going? She's like, hey, you want to come for a quick ride? We'll be real quick. And I don't know if the gun came out or not. Okay. And he probably went over there and got in the car. And then little by little, he started to piece it together like, oh shit, she's not going to take me back.
As you're saying this, I've got like this anime thought bubbles coming up. I really wish I could illustrate this for the listening audience, but keep going, Tom. She's going, wow, she looks great in that tank top.
You need to splice in some Japanese. Oh, cooking washi no no
treasure. Well, because I don't know how long he'd been out on this mission, but I tell you what, if I was on my mission and an ex-girlfriend who was pretty attractive came up in a car and says, hey, you want to go for a quick ride? You remember me? And maybe she had a see-through shirt with no bra too, you know? And I was like
she did earlier.
Yeah, I know, right? Pilot. That's how she got the pilot, yeah. And so I'm sure he probably said, he turned to his companions like, yeah, just give me a few minutes, just a few minutes. And then he got in the car, and then that was it. And she probably didn't have to use the chloroform, whatever. And then he did say that initially it was rape, that he was tied up, spread eagle, like it says. But then the first three times he was raped, and then after that he was not tied up, and I guess he didn't claim rape on those.
Sure.
That's confabulation right there.
Well, and that's what she quoted as well. She quoted his testimony in it. She said, well, he said after the first three times, then he was a lot more willing to do it at that point.
Yeah, she says he wasn't complaining by the seventh time.
Right.
Hey, did you guys think at all when you were watching this, like, wow, this is every missionary's fantasy.
Yes.
That your hot girlfriend shows up.
This guy's living every missionary's wet dream. So why would we feel bad when every guy wants to be him?
Because Tom? Because you are able to have sex over and over and over over this wonderful weekend with no guilt. It's not your fault.
Yeah, you get to go to your mission president and say, hey, I was tied up. I don't know. It was weird. I mean, she literally threw herself at me.
She says that he, as soon as she started putting the moves on it, well, first of all, she talks about how he was impotent because of brainwashing.
BS.
Yeah, and that she was willing to give up her virginity just to get him out of that cult. You know, if that's what it took, she was going to do it. You know, so this is a noble action that she's doing.
And yeah, then there was also the
all money to get on this trip through prostitution. Yeah. She's going to lose her virginity on this weekend with this guy.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, there was this weird obsession that I really couldn't wrap my brain around where she really felt like she needed to get pregnant by this guy.
Yeah. What did you guys think when she did this chant? Like, by the holy prophet Joseph Smith, I cannot touch my body or other people's body in an unnatural way. You know, she said that he sat up and he did this.
Bullshit. No, none of us have ever even heard of that.
No, yeah, well,
he might have. He might have.
He might have what? By the holy prophet Joseph Smith?
No, I don't know. He probably did raise his hand, you know, and do some sort of like.
Say it, Tom. What did he do? Say it.
He would say, in the name of Jesus Christ, I command thee to get behind me, Satan.
Yeah.
Something like
and
that.
I think she just misunderstood what he was saying, or he might have even like mispronounced what he was saying too, because, you know, he.
Oh, no, he probably, like, if that happened, like, I can imagine that incident happening, that he raises his arm to the square and tries to cast out the devil that's in her because he thinks she's possessed.
Yeah.
And that she has no idea what he's doing, and so this confabulation of her memory, she's just, you know, saying it felt like this to her, so foreign.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're not, like, fixating on the specific words, but that he actually did something like that. That's what I thought.
I could see that.
Yeah, and they took this little aside to talk about garments, and they called it the Mormon underwear, which, like, what do you guys think when you hear that?
Well, it is the Mormon underwear. They called it the magic underwear.
Oh, the magic, that's right, the magic underwear, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
it's just another card right out of the Godmakers, I thought. It's just another.
But it's one of those things where it's not the Mormon term for it, but if you're an outsider, I mean, what else do you call it? Because garment doesn't make sense. Garment is just a piece of clothing to other people. And temple garment, or, you know, the coats of skin. I mean, none of those Mormon terms make any sense to an outsider. So how do you describe the temple garment to an outsider?
I think that magic underwear is so pejorative. And it kind of goes to what Randy was saying earlier. It's so over the top that somebody who's on the inside of Mormonism would just reject it offhand and not think about the implications there. You know, do Mormons think of garments as being magic or having magical properties?
Yes.
Some do.
Not magical like David Copperfield or, you know, Go Bluth or whatever. Yeah,
like,
but
spiritual armor.
Yeah, like they're going to, I mean, they tell you that in the temple too, that they're going to be a shield and a protector to you as long as you wear them. And, you know, your bishop will ask you if you're wearing them day and night. And there's all kinds of stories about them protecting people. I mean, that's not real fringy stuff within Mormonism. No, I think that's pretty mainstream.
I have a personal story. When I was on my mission, I was on the reservation, and we were riding down a very steep, gravelly hill. And my handlebar split in half. You know, I went straight down. And I went home. And I looked at all of my scratches, and all of them were outside of the line of my garments. And I told that story over and over, how my garments were a protector to me. So it was there is an element that these are some magical shield, both physically and spiritually.
But here, I object to the word magic because it's so secular. And like that protection that you look at yourself...
To an outsider,
sacred.
What word are you going to use? To an outsider, what
sacred.
Word are you going to use?
Sacred.
Yeah, sacred garments. Like, yeah.
No, because they are protectors. They're protectors against the unseen evils of the world and physical harm. What else is that but magic?
Yeah.
What other colloquial word can an outsider use on regular cotton, polyester, fiber underwear that protects you from a bike crash, you know, or to quote the guy who the Marriott guy, when he was burned everywhere except on where his garments protected him. What other colloquial word can you use than magic?
Okay, I'm going to jump in here for a second, you know, because Randy mentioned this quote from Marriott that was given on national TV, an interview that Mike Wallace did in the mid-90s. And interestingly enough, the adjective that Mike Wallace uses, well, I don't know, listen to it yourself.
We're not a weird people.
A weird people?
Yes.
Mormons know that some outsiders think they are weird. Why? Well, for one thing, devout Mormons wear sacred undergarments for protection from harm. Cotton undershirts with undershorts that reach to their knees. Do you wear the sacred undergarments?
Yes, I do. And I can tell you they do protect you from harm.
Really?
Uh-huh. I was in a very serious boat accident. Fire. Boat was on fire. I was on fire. Mm-hmm. I was burned. My pants were burned right off me. I was not burned above my knee. Where the garment was, I was not burned.
And you believe it was the sacred undergarments?
I do, particularly on my legs, because my pants were gone. My undergarments were not cinched.
I mean, I think you're expecting way too much from an outsider in this instance.
You could say divine.
Yeah, there's a lot of terms, but I mean, semantics. So this chick burns the garments off this guy, right?
Okay, rips Tom wants off. Us to move on.
She throws him in the fireplace. Yeah,
something like that.
So at least he disposed of the marks properly.
So why is it that the garments will burn when they're in the fireplace, but they won't burn if they're on the body?
Yeah, that's how you do it. Sorry, Glenn, start over.
No, I just said, why will the garments burn in the fireplace, but they won't burn if they're on somebody's body?
Oh. You found the sacred loophole.
Oh.
Maybe they have to be touching the endowed skin in order to have the power in them.
Right. Well, problem solved.
So they're not magic underwear. It's the combination.
So no matter what I try to do, you're going to bring this shit back, Don Glenn.
It's like the greatest American hero putting on that super suit, and then he's got superpowers. Not anybody. You can't like have anybody put on garments and have that protection. So it's not the magic that's in the garment. It's the covenant behind it. That's why.
It's still magic.
No.
Dude, because then who by cares? Themselves. You're killing me. Let's move on. I know there's audience members out there that agree with me. Let's just move the F on.
Because here's the thing about magic.
Yeah. Go on, Glenn. Yeah,
right.
We're all anxious to hear.
Okay. So how did he get out? What happened where he got out of the cottage?
She stood up.
She had to go to the bathroom and he ran out.
Yeah. She raised up off his flaccid.
No, they just.
Oh, thanks, Randy.
He made it. She made it sound like they were just going to go to London and get married.
Yeah, and then, they were going into London to get married. Like,
so they left. They left the love cottage. They're on their way, and there's pictures in the newspaper or something, right? She sees a picture of him in a newspaper that he's been abducted, and she's like, "Wait a minute. What are you abducted?
This is." And they're sitting there laughing about it.
Yeah, right.
Can I make one side note comment real quick? This
if it has to do with magic underwear.
the is it KG or KJ?
KJ.
The accomplice that was apparently just head over heels for her
before she played for the Suns.
Did he play for the Suns?
KJ
Kevin Johnson.
Kevin Johnson.
Yeah.
He dunked on Elijah Wan.
He did.
Okay. So this guy supposedly was like head over heels for her and would do anything she asked, anything. And so is it true that he was the guy that tied Kirk up to the bed and then he leaves the room, is like sitting in the kitchen, you know, probably twirling his thumbs like, I hope they're having a good time, while he's totally head over heels for her. I mean, did anybody else besides me feel bad for this poor guy?
Yeah, but it wasn't just him. It was him. KJ, and then the pilot, and then also Miskovich, the guy back in L.A. who had all her
pictures,
all of her pictures, and her her dog, and her all her, you know, he was walking her dog while she's doing this. I mean, she clearly had this power over guys.
Yeah, so
where she could get them to do whatever she wanted.
So I want
a certain kind of guy.
So I want to wait. I want to wave the finger of blame to you women out there. If you guys have a lot more power over us guys than you think you do. All right, the end. So I don't want to hear. I don't want to hear this feminism crap. Like, we just want to be equal. You guys already dominate us for the most part. All right, so just back.
Especially if you're hot.
If you're into that.
especially if you're hot. I think maybe you don't quite understand what the feminism thinks about Tom, if that's what you think. But.
Yeah. For the good, just because I don't want my name attached to this, edit that whole fucking misogynistic diatribe out, please. Oh, my God.
Yeah, we don't want to get banned from Facebook here.
Yeah, I think I'm going to hate
it. That would be the worst.
Okay, hey, so.
Wait, whoa. Did you hear about that?
Okay, let's not.
You did?
What?
You heard I got banned from Facebook?
Yes. Yeah. You wrote all about it.
Oh, and Papa Midnight. Okay, never mind.
You got banned from Facebook, Randy?
That's a side story. Let's go on.
Oh, for Lord's sakes, I'm totally unplugged.
Okay, so I think then she gets arrested, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she's in the back of a police car. She's being taken away, and she writes a note.
Yeah,
she then throws out the window to the press.
What are
the details there, Tom?
Two pieces of paper that were out of the Bible.
Oh, that's
she
right.
She writes
because God put them there.
Yeah, God put those two blank pieces of paper at the back of the Bible. So this was her one saving moment. She put the first piece of paper up her vagina, the second piece of paper up her anus because. Well, you know, she didn't have a suitcase or a purse with her, so.
No, and when you're in prison, they inspect you, make sure you don't have anything on you.
But she's just in the back of the car, and then she threw them out the window as they're driving.
No, she was in prison for a while, and that's where she read the Bible. They gave her a Bible.
Yeah.
She found the blank pieces of paper, and then when they were transporting her somewhere, they're going to check her person for contraband. And she didn't want them to find these notes. So she, like Tom said, stuck them one in her vagina, one in her anus. Why didn't she just stick them both in her vagina? Is it not big enough? Anyway, that's disgusting.
Because one page came out of the front of the book and the other page came out of the back.
Oh, my gosh.
She was going for Alpha and Omega.
Oh, my gosh.
It was Genesis to Revelation.
Sure. All right, enough.
Well, she throws it out the window, and she mouths to some guy. He's Millet, and he's able to somehow decipher her plea.
I'm sure he picked it up with some tweezers and some rubber gloves, but yeah.
It's so disgusting, the thought.
It's terrible, terrible.
So the rest of the documentary from this point really focuses on her and all of this prostitution or whatever it was, sex services that she was selling and a lot of nude photos of her that she claimed were fake. But and to me, it seems really strange because I'm mostly interested in this, you know, missionary part of the story than the other things that it goes on. And, you know, there's a story about how she gets her dog, her dead dog, Booger, cloned in Korea, and whenever that was, you know, that was nuts. But to me, that's all there to show how credible or how believable she is, you know, just kind of like a look into her mind, a look into her world, you know. And like she was talking about this dog that attacked her very viciously, and she blamed the pharmacist, the women at the drug counter, that they gave intentionally the wrong medication to the dog, and that made the dog attack her.
Yeah, and somehow knew that all the capillaries in his brain exploded.
Yeah, right.
And that's made him go crazy.
Because when I was watching the movie, I kept thinking, why is this relevant to the story? And I had the same thought you had, Glenn, like, oh, this is the director putting the frosting on the crazy cake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good totally way to say what it is. Yeah.
Did she describe the spirit of the dog floating around the room and everyone could see it?
Oh my gosh.
We finally got to the final stop in Crazy Town.
So, Glenn, the most important question of all.
Yeah.
No strings attached. Would you still tap that?
I didn't think that she was that cute. I mean, even back in the day.
They just ended on the picture.
No.
Like, there were some shots where I was like, she is hot in that picture. And those other shots, I'm like, ew.
No, I'm sorry.
Like
I mean,
Seinfeld episode.
Yes. She is the girl that in some light is hot and in other lights is ugly. And you want to take her to that one restaurant where the lighting makes her look pretty. like Seinfeld.
Yeah. No, I mean, I can see the appeal. She's not really my type. She kind of looks like a Who from Whoville. And that's kind of, yeah. She did pageants when she was a little girl, so I think the moral of the story is don't have your kids in pageants. I think that's the take-home message. So, but Tom, what I was hoping that you would ask, you know, whenever we review a movie or something like this book, or you always go around and ask people to rate it.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so should I begin?
Yeah, man.
I thought it was, I actually enjoyed myself. There was plenty of times where I was laughing out loud. And I couldn't believe my eyes. I mean, if this was a fictionalized story, most people would dismiss it immediately. Like, ow, look at the imagination on this author. Give me a break. But the fact that this happened for reals.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10, dude.
What do you think, Jesse?
I'd give it a 7.5. I really enjoyed it. It's not super long. I like the style of the documentary. I thought it was pretty informative. Yeah, it was a good watch. I liked it.
All right, Randy.
I'm like Jesse. Excuse me. I'm like Jesse. Although Tom and Jesse are not on the side of the fence that Glenn and I are, where we never heard this story. We never we couldn't believe that we hadn't heard this story because there's so many ridiculous apocryphal stories that go around missions. And the only stories I heard of were Florida State. Like, if you went on a mission to Tallahassee, that sorority initiation rites were to bag a missionary. And that was this lurid and crazy sex story I'd ever heard about missionaries. But if I'm rating the movie, you know, based on the amount of people they were able to gather together, because the guy was KJ. He's dead. I mean, he lived till 2004.
Why didn't she clone KJ?
I know.
She clones the dog Booger, but she doesn't clone KJ.
If she had cloned KJ, now she would have had like
him, Tom.
She would have had her minion, and she could have had many minions. Yeah. Yeah, she had what, 6 boogers?
Yeah, right.
They even put the names of all the boogers. They were all booger something, booger this,
oh,
booger that.
Gosh.
I'd give it a 7.5 as well.
I'd probably give it maybe a 6.5 or a 7. So I'm right in with you guys. My biggest complaints, I didn't think that their presentation of the Mormon church was as balanced as I would have liked it to have been. I think they went for sensational and just kind of left it there. It made me think of another documentary that has a Mormon theme to it called New York Doll, which I think we'll probably review at some point. But I actually like that one better. I went and I got that one and watched that with my wife afterwards.
Can I make one final comment?
Yeah.
Because I watched this with my wife as well, and we had this discussion, which I'm sure was the highlight dilemma that this kind of story presents back in the 70s and 80s is, can a guy actually be raped?
That's like putting a marshmallow in a parking meter.
Because she actually says in the documentary that she's like, if he has an erection, that's it. You know, he's into it. And I was talking to my wife, and she'd asked me the same question, and I thought, I think a guy can be raped, but whew, what a gray area that is.
I remember the legal situation in England at the time. She couldn't be charged with rape because it wasn't there wasn't even a precedent for it. It hadn't been defined that men could be raped.
Yeah.
I mean, forgetting the legal technicalities of 1970s England, I think she showed up and got him. She had, you know, muscles or thugs with her at the time. She chained him to the bed and she forcibly had sex with him. I mean, that's what it sounds like. So I don't know what that is other than rape.
Yeah.
But I also think that for a guy who's as big as him, if he had struggled with all his might to, of course, maybe he thought there was a gun on him. So maybe, I don't know what he was thinking, but it seemed to me like at some point in the story that he started going along with it, or he became okay with it. But I definitely think a guy could be raped.
Yeah, and I definitely think it was a legitimate rape, and I'm quite certain that his body shut down any process that would get him pregnant. So
because the human body has a way of shutting that whole thing down.
He just shut that whole thing. He just shut it all down. So
I heard that from doctors.
Yeah. He's safe. Yeah.
I think to that point though, the whole concept of your erection comes from your wanting to be aroused. That's not true. I mean, you could. That's
your erection if the wind shifts.
Yeah, that's a physiological response.
But I will grant that a man can be raped at gun, you know, if he thinks it's at gunpoint and there's muscle there and there's a girl that's attractive enough to get him an erection. But I just cannot put it at the same level of a woman being raped. I don't like using the word rape because I think that belongs to women and there's a certain kind of violence.
So what word would you use? Magic?
No, I think it's, I don't know, like some kind of, I got to invent a word.
That's what you're asking me to do.
It's, you know,
sorry,
Tom. He was forced to do something against his complete will. But it's to me, it's,
obedience.
It's not. I just cannot put it at the same level as a woman being raped. I wish we had Matt on here because you know he's the expert on this stuff. But
call him
right now.
Yes,
I guess
I can tell you guys. I know in law school we studied there were cases of women raping men. I mean, I know there is legal precedence for it, but
yeah,
I'm calling him right now. I got him on.
All
right.
Yeah. Hey, Matt, did you watch the movie that we were talking about, Tabloid?
Tabloid? I haven't had an opportunity to, now.
Okay, so this is a case where, like, a 28, 29-year-old woman kidnaps a Mormon missionary in England, holds him in a cottage for 3 days, and rapes him.
This is a true story?
Yeah, it's a true story. Yeah. And so the question that Tom asked at the end of the podcast is... Is it possible for a woman to rape a man? And so we just got into all of these terms about, like, is that really the same thing as rape, or is there a better term for it? And, you know, as we're talking about it, Randy's like, man, I wish Matt was here. So we got
you. Well, you're in luck, because with me as well as a very experienced sex crimes detective as well, we're presenting here. So, I mean, I'm not aware of a case where it's been charged, like an adult woman raping an adult man.
Yeah, Jesse, you're full of shit.
I'm not saying that it couldn't happen, especially if she's penetrating him or if she's sodomizing him.
No. Just traditional intercourse.
Traditional intercourse.
Well, as traditional as it can be with him being spread eagle to a bed.
No. We're talking penis into vagina. We're not talking about her grabbing big objects and sticking it up his ass. None of that was alleged.
But it would still be sex assault. Okay. Anything that's without his consent. I mean, absolutely.
Okay, but
an erect penis does not suggest consent.
Correct.
Okay.
Of course not. It's a physiological response. That's like saying when kids, because a kid happens to respond, whether it be female or male, which they do, by the way, they often will report pleasure. It's a physiological response.
Yeah.
And and even women do when they're raped, will disclose a response. It's physiological that, and often the abuser will do it so that it is pleasurable, but that doesn't make it less abuse or that doesn't take away the lack of consent component.
I mean, there's a violence to forcing a body part of yours into the body part of another versus, you know, tricking you to have an erection and then
sitting
on your penis. No. Would you agree that it's a fundamentally less violent act?
No. I guess what I don't do is try to give a hierarchy to violent or any type of a sex offense. That's just something I don't do as a there's no point in it. It becomes nonsensical to say, well, you know, this type of rape was different than this than that type of rape. So I guess I just reject the premise that there's any value in doing something like that.
Well, and it would totally depend on the situation, too. I mean, if she's got a gun to his head, obviously that's more violent than not having a gun to his head. So it would depend on the facts of every case in terms of how violent it was.
And then what if I had a gun to my head, that would shrivel my dick so fast.
Maybe not. Okay,
so what about a woman who is drugged and therefore has no memory of it? That is necessarily a less violent than somebody who happens to be.
No, it's incredibly violent.
Yeah, and so what if the girl drugs the guy and then does something to him? She admits to doing it, but the guy doesn't know. Often the girl isn't going to know. Most girls that get drugged will get up and say, you know, there was something funny down there, or I just had this feeling, or there was a wetness, or there was something, but it's not pain, or it's not physically uncomfortable, but that doesn't make it any less rape. So even if the guy was...
Yeah, but she's now possibly pregnant.
Let's change the facts then. The woman is raped by somebody who could never get her pregnant, and in fact, he uses a condom. That fact alone isn't what makes it violent.
Yeah, but you're talking about exceptions and not the rule.
Well, I think the rule for me is the lack of consent, and that's the rule that I'd focus on. I'm not sure what rule you're relying on. Your rule is penetration. I guess that's a debate, but I don't know. It's a distinction without a difference.
Because I think there's a difference. I think it's a distinction with a difference.
Let's look, I think, at reality. You're ignoring the impact of a guy being the victim and a guy being taking advantage. That would be a huge psychological mindfuck.
Right. Why is it so incredibly rare? You can't even think of a case.
I mean, no one's saying it's as prevalent. Is anyone trying to advance that?
No, but I'm saying it's just, if it almost never happens, then there must be a fundamental difference between that and your traditional man.
Okay, let me extend that further then. We're at a conference here where one of the conferences is mother daughter incest, right? That, what is it? The secret of mother-daughter incest. And we were joking, saying the secret is it hardly ever happens. So in the instances where it happens, do you discount that as well, saying, well, because it's so rare, it's really less severe than all the men who go around abusing their daughters? I mean,
I think it is less
the same
severe
argument. I'll tell you, you just simply misunderstand the dynamics of a victim, because the impact of being abused by your mother – the studies do show that their emotional trauma is much more severe for a myriad of reasons.
All right.
So you're just that one. There is evidence to support, and you're simply wrong about that. So,
well, I've been talked down by an expert, so I will bow down to the expert.
And it's about time. So there you go. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. And if you think there may still be any life in this dead horse, check out Tabloid on Netflix. And if you happen to have any other films or topics that you'd like to hear the panel discuss, let us know on our website, infantsonthrones.com, or find us on our Facebook page. Thanks again for listening. Anyone for the closing prayer?
So while we're waiting, you got kicked off Facebook? Wow. What'd you do to do that?
Nothing, but...
Oh, right. Yeah, you sound like Joyce.
Like an adult, and then some fucking prude on the Mormon Hub reported me for using hate speech, because I used, not at her, but I said, she was talking about taboo words, and I said, and she called people that use curse words are uncouth, and I took exception to that. Uncouth. And and so I talked about how I like to use curse words because they activate a part of your brain, and there's science behind this that conveys an emotion that euphemisms don't.
Yeah, that's a long way of saying it makes me feel good. Yeah.
It does. It makes you feel a way that non-taboo words don't. And like, even Mythbusters did a study on this. You can endure more pain using taboo words.
Even Mythbusters.
Yes.
Even no, I did not. I did not bring in MythBusters, but even MythBusters studied this shit.
Yeah.
And then
talked about it on an episode of The Bachelor too.
I went further and I said, and I'm a big fan of blasphemy, so my, you know, I will often use the curse word Jesus fucking Christ. And this girl just couldn't take it. And she's like, so becoming an ex-Mormon made you an asshole. I'm like, well, that's ironic that you used the curse word, an uncouth curse word.
You threw the iron back.
Nice. I said, thank you for not disappointing. You proved my point. And she reported me to Facebook because I said Jesus fucking Christ.
Or someone who was reading the thread reported him to Facebook. You don't know that it was her.
Oh, I know it was her because all of the mods, like I know Brant, and Brant vouched for all the mods. They were too busy doing something. They had no idea this was going on.
Yeah, but it could have been any person reading that thread.
It could have been any person, but who was most pissed at me? The one who called me an asshole.
You're the one that bases everything on evidence. I'm just saying you don't have any. You're speculating.
Okay, this is complete speculation.
Thank you.
But somebody... I grant you that, Glenn. I don't know who did. It could have been the original poster who started the whole club. Anyway, somebody reported me to Facebook for using hate speech because I said Jesus fucking Christ. And from Facebook for like 3 days.